Charles Dickinson, John Dickinson.
All right. Mr. Dickinson, fine. I think when you slipped on that banana peel, you did a little bit more damage to yourself than you think.
What do you mean? My head hurts a little bit, but that's all.
Mr. Dickinson. A few minutes ago, you were telling me about how you were looking all over Long Island for your wife, Kathy, who ran away from home.
Mister, if anybody slipped his lid, it's you. I really don't know what you're talking about.
You don't, do you? Well, we'll see about that. What are you doing here?
Well, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. And if you live in Syracuse, then why are you behind a fruit and vegetable stand in Huntington, on Long Island? Hmm?
I don't know. Okay,
Mr. Dickinson. If you are who you say you are, then let me see some identification papers. Let's have a look at that wallet.
Well, that won't be a problem. Yeah, my credit cards don't lie. See for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Each and every one of these cards says that you're Howard Tripod, not John Dickinson.
Hurry up, Marge. She's really starting to crock up now.
Come over here, Mr. Tripod. The ambulance is coming right about now.
I just don't understand it. I really am going crazy. I would have never believed it. How could this be happening?
It's probably just a temporary seizure, Mr. Tripod. You've been through a lot of stress and strain recently. And maybe you just unconsciously tried to forget who you were so that you could escape.
Well, it certainly worked. I don't know anything about myself.
Well, don't worry, Mr. Tripod. The men from the hospital will be taking really good care of you.
I don't know. I'm not looking forward to this.
Well, listen, they're trained to take care of people like you, Mr. Tripod. But don't worry. You'll be okay.
All right. Which one of you is the crazy person?
And so Howard realizes that he does indeed have amnesia as he leaves for the hospital. What will become of it? Will he ever find Kathy? And what about Pop and Charlie? You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say,
"Hey, why are those bars on the window?"
That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
When I see that. and brave. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. And though I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, don't you understand? It's not my
quick fades of Bob Dylan. That's incredible. I've always wanted to know who he was talking about when he wrote that song. Positively 4th Street here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Brain Damage is the program. This is Eric Corley, and we've got a message coming to us in 20 minutes from an electronic computer, so we'll be waiting for that. In the meantime, let's give out our phone number, 632-6901, to talk about the topics of the day. And also, I've got a piece of music here which I think applies to non-commercial radio quite a bit. And the people that are interested in non-commercial radio, from Home T, Coca T, and Shabba Ranks, album called Holding On. And this is the Pirates Anthem. Listen carefully.
Everybody want me to go to the PlayStation. Advertise a stage show and make you dance all around. Never take the equipment and I put it in a van. If them broke down one, we make five more strong.
Down in England, we've got lots of radio stations.
Analyze.
Playing the people music night and day. Yeah, yeah. Reggae, calypso, hip-hop or disco. The ladies is what we play. On and on, off and on.
If they turn it off, we are gonna turn it on back. If they turn it off, we are gonna turn it on back. If them broke it down, we are gonna build it on back. If them take where we record, then we get fresh start. Now me love this station, and me love them to a man. We release and dump it, and all boom shot. BTI are fine, but them can't stop that.
The Pirates, the leader broadcasters. Just because we play what the people want, them a call us pirates, them a call us
everybody listen to the PlayStation to advertise a dance and ram your session. If a music you want to get them new brand action station, me say for everyone. If them broke down one, we build five more strong.
They're passing laws, they're planning legislation, trying their best to keep the music down. The beat.
us, but they came.
Yes.
One son could have never run England. Two son could have never run England. Three son could have never run England. Everybody want to rip up with them station. If them broke down one, we build five more strong. If them broke down two, we build 10 more strong. Advertise the stage, so I make you dance all around. Miss a cock for your kids and throw the play station. If you want to hear and show, that is
all I know.
And that is the sound of Screaming Target with the screaming dub of Who Killed King Tubby. And that's the sound of King Tubby underneath us. We also heard Home Tea and Cocotee, Shabaranks Holding On, the Pirate's Anthem. For all you pirate broadcasters out there, we know you're out there. And we share spirit, at least, if not frequency. 22 minutes after 11 o'clock, the program is Brain Damage. And believe it or not, it's usually a call-in program. In fact, it's a call-in program tonight, too. I just really haven't been in a talkative mood. So if you feel like saying something, sharing your life experiences, now is the time, I suppose. 632-6901. We're going to definitely be getting a call at 11:30 from me. And if you weren't tuning in a half hour ago, you'll just have to tune in 8 minutes and see what that all means. All kinds of fun things going on in the world, as usual, with trials and tribulations. But as long as we're closer to the rap world, I guess we'll talk about what's happening in Westerly, Rhode Island. Federal district judge yesterday forbade that the Westerly Town Council to interfere in a concert by the rap music group Two Live Crew. The town council planned to consider revoking the Windjammer Concert Club's entertainment license for the October 6th show, but agreed to delay its meeting pending the court ruling. The American Civil Liberties Union asked for a court order against the hearing, saying it constituted censorship. The judge, Raymond J. Pitine, ruled that the performance is protected First Amendment activity. Lyrics from the Two Live Crew's album, As Nasty As They Want to Be, which included explicit depictions of various sexual acts and violence, have been ruled obscene by a federal judge in Florida. Members of the group were arrested after a performance in Hollywood, Florida, and their trial on the criminal charges is to start in the second week of October in Fort Lauderdale, and that should be a lot of fun. Also, a related case involving a record store owner charged with selling obscene material when he sold a record by the Two Live Crew to an undercover police officer is scheduled to be tried on Monday, also in Fort Lauderdale. And as if that's not enough, in Cincinnati, opening arguments yesterday that sometimes turned passionate, lawyers in the Mapplethorpe obscenity trial outlined their approaches to the nation's first criminal trial of an art museum over the content of an exhibition. The prosecution vowed to prove that the Contemporary Arts Center here in Cincinnati, there actually, knowingly pandered obscenity in the form of homoerotic and sadomasochistic images, and that it illegally displayed photographs of nude children with a lewd exhibition or graphic focus on the genitals in an exhibition of the work of the late Robert Mapplethorpe last spring. This is the opportunity for you to decide. What is the limit? Where do you draw the line? Frank Prouty, the lead prosecutor, told the jury of four men and four women. Regardless of who the defendant is, regardless of where it's exhibited, where do you draw the line? The defense said it would focus on establishing the legitimacy of the Arts Center as a cultural institution protected from obscenity laws, and the importance of Mr. Mapplethorpe as an artist and chronicler of a sometimes wild era of homosexual life before the AIDS epidemic. Mapplethorpe not only did beautiful pictures, but not so beautiful pictures, said H. Lewis Serkin, a defense lawyer. It shows a period of American history in the 1970s which we may never even have, never, it's hard to read this because the New York Times has a paste-up line going down the middle of the article. It shows a period of American history in the 1970s which we may never, ever have again, okay? And maybe, perhaps, we should never have again. But it does show something and records something and fulfills all the functions that we ever want art to show us. The case, considered a test of current standards on obscenity, hinges on seven of 175 photographs that appeared in the exhibition, which closed in Cincinnati in May. Five of the seven photographs depict adult men in sadomasochistic poses, and two photographs showed children with their genitals exposed. And yesterday, those seven photographs were the first evidence entered by the prosecution.
and the prosecution said it expects the pictures to speak for themselves. The pictures are the state's case in some respect, Mr. Prudy said in his opening argument. Look at the pictures, see if that's moral innocence. The prosecution and lawyers for each defendant, the Arts Center and its director, Dennis Barry, were each given 10 minutes to make opening statements. Mark D. Mizabov, the attorney representing the museum, used his 10 minutes to describe the Arts Center to the jurors who, under questioning during the jury selection process earlier this week, had said they previously knew or cared little about art or museums. Typical Americans, in other words. He told them about the museum's mission to present provocative art and stimulate interest in the arts through lectures and exhibitions. He cast the museum as a valuable citizen of the community that was seeking only to enlighten. And he made an appeal for open-mindedness in a case where the moral predisposition of jurors is considered crucial to the outcome. We don't want any breaks, Mr. Mezeboff said. We don't want any sympathy. We want a fair shake. The trial later got underway in Hamilton County Municipal Court with the testimony of two police officers from the Cincinnati Vice Squad who inspected the exhibition before its April 7th opening. They were among the dozens of officers and sheriff's deputies who temporarily closed the museum on the opening day of the exhibit to videotape the photographs for evidence and possibly personal thrills as well. The officers were prosecution witnesses whose testimony was used primarily to establish the fact that the exhibition took place and to create doubt in defense contentions that the museum had restricted admittance to the exhibition to people who were 18 years of age or over. Was there any control of where people went once inside? Mr. Prudy asked Officer James Hicks. No, sir, Officer Hicks said. The place was packed. It was wall-to-wall people. It was crowded. In other words, there was no way to control who saw what, Mr. Prudy said. Boy, what a horrible thing, not being able to control what people see. Whew. Danger in there is just, it's too overwhelming to even talk about. But under questioning by defense lawyers, Officer Hicks acknowledged that it was too crowded for him to determine whether museum attendants were checking identifications. Earlier in the day, the jury took a field trip requested by the defense. The jurors walked up the granite stairs of the Contemporary Arts Center, led by a bailiff, and stood silent and stone-faced in the foyer near the spot where sheriff's deputies handed the indictment to Mr. Barry 5 months ago. A few craned their necks to glimpse the skylight and dome in the main gallery and peeked at the walls where Mr. Mapplethorpe's calla lilies and nudes once hung. They were not allowed inside the galleries proper because Judge David J. Albanese said the current exhibition might distract them. The bailiff shrugged his shoulders, then led the jurors back down the stairs and past the drugstore beneath the Arts Center. Their time inside the museum took all of 5 seconds. Once back in the courtroom, Mr. Serkin, the defense lawyer, made an emotional plea to the jurors to find a way to accept a new definition of art. Art is not always pleasing to our eyes, he said. Art is to tell us something about ourselves and to make us look inside ourselves and to look at the world around us. A lot of interesting things going on in the world, folks. A lot of interesting things and a lot of dangerous things, a lot of sad things, too. But before we get into that, it's 11:30, and the phone's not ringing. Why is the phone not ringing? Well, the phone's not ringing because nobody's calling, but we expect our message to be coming through any moment now. So if you want to beat the message, give a call now, 632-6901. It's a sure thing. It should be ringing us any second now. Literally any second that phone will be ringing. 632-6901. And oh, there it is, but that's an on-campus call, I can tell. I can tell by the way it's flashing. Oh, I'll take it anyway. Good evening.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Am I on the air?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just listening to what you were saying about the arts ordeal.
Uh-huh.
And it's been going on for a while. I'm pretty sick of it.
You're pretty sick of what aspect of it?
The aspect that it's good at making a lot of it's getting a lot of media.
Uh-huh.
And
you think it's an important issue? You think it's something
it
that
is.
We should make a big
it
fuss
is.
About?
It is a very important issue, especially in America. It's in the land of the free.
Good point.
And I think that these Jesse Helms conservative people are really pushing it.
Yeah, they certainly are. And one has to wonder, when are they going to push too far, you know?
Oh, it is. And that's my point tonight.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right.
632-6901. Good evening. Oh, they hung up just as I picked up the phone. Great. That's just wonderful. Well, I guess our call didn't come through either. I wonder why not. Well, 632-6901 is our telephone number, area code 516. And speaking of technology, well, maybe I'll get to that in a second, but let's try this one out over here. Okay, help for forgetful bank card holders. That's right, Chemical Bank doesn't want its customers to take their money and run, not without their automated teller card and receipt. So now Chemical Bank is testing a change in the way cash is dispensed from its 359 New York City money machines. Under the usual system, the machine swallows a customer's card, dispenses the requested amount of cash, and then returns the card and issues a receipt. The trouble is that a good many morons have been scooping up their cash but forgetting to retrieve their cards. Now, in an experiment at 15 Manhattan branches, Chemical is reversing its card-then-cash procedure. Actually, I think they got that wrong. I think it's supposed to be it's reversing its cash-then-card procedure, because if it's card-then-cash, there's no problem because the person takes the card first. Anyway, the new format might also prevent strangers from stealing money from accounts whose bearers have taken their money but left their cards in the machine. Well, we wait with bated breath to see if the new system will actually work. 632-6901. Quite a lot of activity at the United Nations over the past couple of days. It's the World Summit for Children at the UN. Lights went out in some of the Big Apple's tallest buildings tonight in tribute to the World Summit for Children at the United Nations. Among the buildings whose lights went out at 8 p.m. for 1 minute were the Empire State Building, the Consolidated Edison Building, although that was an accident, the Chrysler Building, the Pan Am Building, the New York Life Insurance Building, the Times Tower in Times Square, and the Pepsi-Cola sign over the East River. At the same time, church bells rang at St. Patrick's Cathedral, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, and other churches around the city. The display honors the participants in the historic World Summit for Children. President Bush came to town today, bringing along what he always does, massive traffic tie-ups. The path the president takes uptown after helicoptering in from New Jersey is always cleared of vehicles and pedestrians. Most of the VIP guests were in meetings today as opposed to a day earlier when they were bopping around town. Patricio Aylwin of Chile spoke at a foreign affairs forum. Prime Minister Toshiki Kafu picked up an honorary degree at New York University. Queen Fabiola of Belgium visited the Covenant House shelter for young runaways. There is even some celebrity watching. Norwegian Prime Minister Jan Sees met Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward in a Manhattan restaurant this week. And more visible than the heads of state are those angered by their presence. Yesterday there were three demonstrations within 50 feet outside the United Nations. A group of U.S. veterans demonstrated outside the Waldorf Astoria Hotel to protest the meeting between... Okay, all right, I'll pronounce this right. Enyen Ko Thak. All right, I hope so. Foreign Minister of the Socialist Republic of Vietnam and Secretary of State James Baker. Apparently, U.S. veterans want to let hostilities continue into infinity. Yeah, why not? Speaking of hostilities, President Bush arrived today with a plan to combat measles, polio, and other childhood diseases, and AIDS among American children. But summit organizers were stunned and dismayed to learn today that President Bush will leave UN headquarters tomorrow without signing a declaration on children's rights with other leaders. Bush was too busy with the whirlwind of one-on-one meetings. Kind of makes you sick, you know, right where it counts. Anyway, the action plan that Bush will not sign, among other goals, resolves to reduce child mortality below age 5 by one-third, or to a level of 70 per 1,000 births, whichever is the greater reduction. Also cut maternal mortality rates by half, reduce malnutrition among children under 5 by half, assure universal access to safe drinking water and septic systems, provide universal access to basic education, and have at least 80% of primary school children finish school, cut adult illiteracy by half, protect children in dangerous circumstances, especially in armed conflict. Officials say Bush is to leave UN headquarters after an appearance tomorrow morning for a group photograph and won't be present to sign the declaration. I mean, at least we know where his priorities are. The group photograph is so damn important, isn't it? Anyway, the simultaneous signing is scheduled for about 5 p.m. Now, another goal of the summit is to get more signatures on an international agreement guaranteeing basic human rights for children called the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And conservatives in Congress have criticized the document because it forbids the death penalty for people under age 18, and because it does not define a fetus as a child and thus protected by the convention. A U.S. official speaking on condition of anonymity said the White House, State Department, Justice Department, and other agencies are still studying the ramifications of the convention. So far, Bush has not even signed the convention, and the official could not guarantee it would be ratified. And that's some of the news coming out of the world today. Some of the news that makes you embarrassed. You find yourself being embarrassed more and more when people ask you where you're from? I do. Of course, most of the people I know where I'm from, but where are the priorities? On kind of a personal note, and most definitely a very sad note, for those of you that have been listening to this radio station for a number of years, you may remember the name of Doug Delmar, who used to be our news director a few years ago. He died of AIDS on Tuesday, September 18th, 1990, and he was diagnosed 2 years ago as contracting the virus due to procedures involving his condition as a hemophiliac. Doug Delmar was a native of Kingman, Arizona. He also resided in San Diego, as well as Brooklyn, New York, before he settled with his parents in Levittown in the 1960s. He graduated from Island Trees High School, attended the State University at Stony Brook, where he studied broadcast journalism. And as an avid photography buff, Delmar, for a while, worked at many camera shops around Long Island before securing a position in journalism. And this is an obituary from a local newspaper here, the Three Village Herald. Doug Delmar worked as a reporter for WBAZ in Southold. Most recently, he was on the on-air. He was the on-air news director for WRIV in Riverhead, as well as the public affairs interviewer on a Saturday interview program. He was also a freelance journalist for several Long Island publications. And some of the stuff that's not in this particular article, of course, is his involvement here at WUSB. Probably one of the best news directors we've had in our brief history of 13 years. And he also did classical music programming here. But, you know, the thing about Doug Delmar was he really cared about things. You know, he really cared about making life better. He worked with public safety here on campus as part of the organization between students and public safety to make the campus a bit safer. You know, he was always involved in that kind of thing. And If you didn't really know him well, you would never know that he was a hemophiliac and had, you know, potential serious problems. I remember reading a letter he wrote to Newsday a few years ago, urging people to be, you know, a bit more understanding about this whole AIDS thing, you know, and perhaps become educated a little bit more. And at one point in the letter he said, I'm a hemophiliac and I could very well have been exposed to the AIDS virus. So it's made me think. And of course that was, I imagine, before he ever knew that he actually had been exposed and before any symptoms certainly became apparent. So as kind of, you know, in tribute of what he stood for, what he was, you know, the person he was, I really think the folks here at WUSB, the folks who listened to this radio station back in the years when Doug was on the air, in memory to him, you know, maybe we should listen to what he had to say and start paying some more attention to this, because obviously the people in power aren't going to be doing this. In some sick way, to recognize the need for AIDS education and AIDS funding is somehow to present yourself as undesirable in the eyes of the voters. And that's why Ronald Reagan couldn't even say the word AIDS for 8 years. That's why George Bush doesn't even think it's important to sign a document. I mean, who knows what the document will do, but I'm sure his signature on anything means something. A document that takes a step towards helping the children of the world, 2 million of which will die of AIDS before 1999, according to a recent study. It just keeps getting worse. And, you know, if you've listened to this program over the past couple of months, you might have heard me expressing some, you know, cautious hesitation towards our plunging ourselves into the Middle East and getting ready for another war. Well, that hesitation is rapidly changing into steadfast opposition, because I see what a waste of time it is. You know, and I was also listening to a program we did here maybe 6 months ago where we were discussing what's going to happen now that peace has broken out. How are they going to spend all this money that they've always been spending on the arms race? You know, they're going to have to find something to deal with, some kind of a conflict. And sure enough, less than a year later, we're embroiled in something that is spending more money than ever before. What is it, $2 billion already? How much money has been allocated to AIDS research this year by the U.S. government? Now, what is the definition of a war? A war is where you're fighting something unjust, something unfair, something unpleasant, something that will take lives. What the hell is AIDS? You know, it's something that's doing that. It's doing it to people we know. And it's going to do it to a lot more people we know. Male, female, adult, child, black, white. Who is it that says AIDS does not discriminate? By plunging ourselves into this this conflict, you know, we're just shifting our priorities into something that's a complete waste. I mean, yeah, of course, anytime one country invades another country, it's bad. But we have to ask ourselves, which is worse, and which can we do the most to prevent, to fix the situation? I don't know. I just I think our priorities are very, very screwed up over the last couple of months since this all started. I hope we do some serious thinking about this, because something has to change. And if it doesn't change soon, we're just going to find ourselves in a very miserable state. I mean, if I had to trade, you know, a cure for AIDS or maybe, okay, how about this? 90% of the way towards finding a cure versus whether or not Kuwait becomes part of Iraq. Okay, it's not fair. It's not fair for the people of Kuwait to become a part of Iraq. But if I had to trade between the two, I would pick the cure for AIDS. Because so many more people are going to be affected by that. So many more innocent people that are being victimized by this real gross unfairness. And I think it should be looked upon in warlike terms. We have got to band together to fight this war. Isn't that what patriotism is all about? You know, we all get together and lend our support to something and overcome it. Well, sending our strongest young men thousands of miles away to the sweltering desert might win a battle over there, but it's doing nothing for us here. Unless you consider keeping oil prices down the most important thing in the world. I know a lot of people do. Well, that's my little soliloquy on this issue here. Probably a good reason why I haven't been talking much tonight either, because it's an emotional thing, you know. It gets you in a certain place when you see it start happening to people that you know. And as I said, it's bound to be happening to many, many more people. Okay, that's pretty much all I've got to say on that issue. Except, you know, I'd like to hear from people if they have any ideas and ways to wake other people up. Things that they might have done, you know. Things that we can all do. Our phone number is 632-6901. Hey, we've only got 12 minutes left. And we're out of here in 12 minutes. I don't know about you, I feel like going out and drinking somewhere, but that's just my perspective at this moment. Let's take a quick look at the news, then we'll go to the phones. How's that? Good, okay. It's a busy weekend for President Bush, but we're not going to tell you any more about that because we're fed up with that. Congressional leaders are spending another late night at the office. The lawmakers may go until 3 in the morning trying to negotiate a compromise deficit-cutting plan. If there's no agreement, huge across-the-board spending cuts are to begin Monday morning. West Germany's highest court today ruled in favor of East Germany's former communist and threw out a plan for holding United German elections on December 2nd. While the ruling won't halt the historic merger between East and West Germany, it has politicians scrambling to come up with alternate plans. And, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. That's all I want to talk about as far as the news goes. And, you know, I know I've been playing a lot of music on the show tonight, but there is something that I did want to play for the talk of Doug and all the things that we need to do. Song by the late Phil Oakes. We'll get to your phone calls right after this. It's called When I'm Gone.
Suffer from the pain when I'm gone. Can say who's to praise and who's to blame when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone. And the evenings and the mornings will be warm when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns while I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone. And the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. Can add my name into the fight while I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone. And I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I will know the right from the wrong when I'm gone, and you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it, I guess I'll have to do it, guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
Phil Oakes in concert, and a song for Doug Delmore. Hopefully, we'll take advantage of the time we've got to do something that will make a difference and last. 632-6901. Let's see who's out there. Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
Alrighty. Alright, I just wanted to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
I respect your opinion, so I guess I'll ask you. Do you think we're going to go to war?
Well, you know, I read in the paper today, New York Times, that people are saying Bush is getting impatient with the embargo because Iraq is not bowing under quickly enough. So there is a good prospect for a war before the first of the year, and they want to get it started before the pilgrimage to Mecca, which takes place in January. So
what is that? Toga in what?
The pilgrimage to Mecca takes place in January, and they want to, I guess they want to beat the rush to that or something. I don't know. But it's it seems as if it's getting more imminent.
Every day.
With every day, yes.
I really don't support it. If we did go to war, I don't support it at all.
Oh, you know, a lot of people say that now, and I think a lot more people are going to say it more vocally when. People start coming back in bags, you know?
Exactly. When body bags start arriving, that's when people start thinking,
yeah,
hey, this isn't cool no more, you know?
No.
I didn't expect this to happen to my friends, my sons, daughters.
What do your friends think of this?
That's funny. Me and my friend were just talking about that the other day.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't like the idea of our, you know, our friends over there fighting and coming back home, you know, with no head and arms.
Do you know people who are over there?
Yes, I have several friends over there.
Really?
Yeah.
And were they reserves or did they enlist or what?
Two of them are in the Marines, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's funny, a lot of people joined up because of this, well, I can learn computers, I can get a free education, all that kind of thing, and now they're saying, wait a minute.
Yeah, 6 months ago, everybody was talking peace, you know, peace is breaking out. Well, peace is breaking out, well, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess it had some people worried, you know, what's going to happen to the defense budget? So they had to find something. I mean, I'm not saying it's not justified to be upset at what Iraq did to Kuwait, but, you know, let's not go crazy here.
Yeah.
Let's think about the other problems we have.
Time to enlist or something. They thought we weren't going to go to war, and this wasn't going to happen. But
it's like investing in the stock market right before the Depression. Thanks for calling, sir.
Alrighty, thank you.
632-6901. Good evening.
Evening. Hello.
How you doing?
Hey. What time is the show going until 12 o'clock?
Yeah, another 4 minutes.
I wish you'd give the listeners more of a respect in the future, more time to talk, you know?
Well, there's no other callers, so you have it till the end now.
Okay, anyway, pretty much agree with what you say. You know, it's not a wise thing going to war. By the way, are you on another radio station in New York City, WBAI?
Occasionally, yeah.
And the other name you use, you don't want me to say it, or is it a secret?
You can say whatever you want. Go ahead.
No, is there a reason why you have a different name? Is it like, what's the deal there?
I use different names for, you know, different reasons. I mean, other people do, too. I'm known as Emmanuel Goldstein, too. That secret is out.
Okay.
There's more names I'm known by, too, but I can't say those over the radio. But what's the purpose of your call?
Just checking in.
Oh, okay. Any opinions on any of this?
I agree we shouldn't go to war.
Okay. Well, make sure you tell people that. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
632-6901. Let's see who else is out there. Good evening.
Hi. I'd like to know why that guy doesn't support the guys.
Why that guy doesn't support what?
The troops in the Middle East.
I guess you're talking about me, right?
No, the guy, the caller.
The guy doesn't support...
Yeah, why he doesn't support the troops in the Middle East? Why isn't...
I didn't hear him say he didn't support the troops in the Middle East.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Well, I think what he said was it's wrong for them to be over there and to be fighting in a war that seems imminent, you know.
Uh-huh.
Do you see that as not supporting? I mean, I support the people over there as people, and I think they're getting a pretty raw deal having to sit in the desert, and if you see them on TV, a lot of them don't seem to know why they're there. You know, that to keep oil prices down, that seems like a kind of crazy reason to die for.
Yeah, well.
You know?
They're there to support the people in Kuwait, you know?
Yeah, but the people in Kuwait didn't have a much better government than the people of Iraq did. I mean, everybody admits that. What Kuwait had was oil and lots of it, and a better way of life. And, you know, that's... You know, better way of life as far as the things you can buy with money. So that's, you know, we want to keep the oil prices down. That's really what it boils down to. I don't think anyone's denying that. And a lot of people say that's reason enough to go over there. I just don't think it is.
Right.
Especially with so many things, you know, happening here that need to be attended to and that are just being ignored.
Very well.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
Okay, I guess that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight, as there's all kinds of activity around me. So the next program is about to be on the air, and that is Power Surge. Thanks to everybody who called up. Thanks to people out there just for listening. And keep talking to each other. Keep spreading word. Keep saying what's on your mind, because that's what really matters in the end. Program has been Brain Damage. This is Eric Corley, and... as soon as I find my outro, I will be out of here. Well, okay, I can't find my outro, so instead of playing my outro, I'm going to play the India Hour theme. I like Indian music anyway. See you next week. Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
Hi, this is Matt with the Concert Billboard for Sunday, September 30th. Tonight, the Railway Children and James Mastro will be at Maxwell's. Tomorrow night, the Masters of Reality will be in the Stony Brook Union Ballroom. Mitch Ryder will be at the Lone Star Roadhouse. Tuesday night, Origin will be at Woody's. They Might Be Giants will be at the Knitting Factory. Wednesday night, the Fleshtones and Treat Her Right will be at Woody's. Pylon will be at Maxwell's. Robin Hitchcock and Jody Grind will be at Tramps. They'll also be there the following night. And Bad Manners and the Scofflaws will be at the Wetlands Preserve. Thursday night also, the Charlatans will be at the Marquee, Lloyd Cole till Tuesday, Matthew Sweet and Sean Colvin will be at the Ritz, Cynics will be at Maxwell's, and Wire Train will be at the Wetlands Preserve. On Friday, October 5th, Wonder Stuff and Pylon will be at the Marquee, Two Live Crew, Scatterbrain, and Poison Clan will be at the Ritz, Shinehead, and Leroy Sibbles will be at the Queens Theater. That's in Queens Village. Saturday, October 6th, the Ramones and Manitoba's Wild Kingdom will be at the Ritz. Jesus Jones will be at Woody's. Deborah Henson Conant and Special Effects will be at IMAC. The Beat Farmers will be at the Lone Star Roadhouse. Yola Tengel will be at Maxwell's. Dave Mason will be at Trax. And there's a WUSB benefit concert in the Stony Brook Union Bayou level featuring Norman Bates and the Showerheads and Yuppieside. On Sunday, October 7th, Scatterbrain, Gorky Park, Blitzbeer, and the Beggar's Opera will be at the Queen's Theater. Thursday, October 11th, Suzanne Vega will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Sonic Youth and Eric Bogosian will be at the Academy, and Jerry Lee Lewis will be at the Queen's Theater. Friday, October 12th, Violence, Defiance, and Toxic Shock will be at Sundance. Boogie Down Productions will be at the Stony Brook Gym. Striper will be at the Ritz. Drama-Rama will be at the Marquee, and Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons will be at the Queen's Theater. Saturday, October 14th, George Carlin will be in the Stony Brook Gym as part of the homecoming festivities. Flotsam and Jetsam and Blitzbeer will be at Sundance. Violence and Defiance will be at the Marquee. Bill Monroe will be at IMAC. Tang Sedang will be in the West Hills Inn. Suzanne Vega will be at the Ritz. Steve Kilby will be at Maxwell's. Also, the Skeletons and Dave Albin will be playing a later show at Maxwell's. Tuesday, October 16th, Gene Loves Jezebel and Andy Preboy will be at the Ritz. And on Friday, October 19th, A Tribe Called Quest will be in the Stony Brook Union Ballroom. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight. Just in case you missed anything, give us a call here at WUSB at 516-632-6901, and stay tuned to WUSB throughout the week for ticket giveaways. This is Matt here on WUSB Stony Brook, where unique sounds begin.
Power. A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively. Power. Physical might. Mental or moral vigor. Surge. A sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power. Force or energy used to do work. The time rate at which work is done. Surge. A transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical circuit. Power surge.
Caution, this album may be considered offensive.
Undefined.